Welcome back to another edition of the Cleveland Baseball Talk Podcast. I'm Joe Noga, joined by Paul Hoynes. Hoynesy, the Guardians come through with another Cactus League win on Thursday as they get back after an off day. What'd you take away from the game on Thursday and how Cleveland ended up there with a 8-5 win over the Royals in Goodyear? Ramon Laureano, Jose Ramirez, and Stephen Kwan look like they're starting to round into regular season shape.
Yeah, I was really impressed with the way Carlos Carrasco pitched. You know, six innings, he gives up three runs, but only one is earned. Four strikeouts, one walk. Just really an efficient and professional performance in kind of a tense situation. He's competing for the fifth spot in a rotation, and he couldn't have pitched much better, Joe. Six innings, his longest start of the spring, and now he's in line. Maybe he gets one more start in spring, but now he's in line along with Tyler Beede to be the fifth starter.
Yeah, it's that decision probably come down to the end of camp. Who knows who's going to win that? But I think like you said yesterday, Carrasco really does have the inside track on that spot, if that's where they're picturing him being the most effective in the rotation. As far as the offense goes, they put up eight runs. Yes, it was the Royals. Yes, it was Alec Marsh was the starter for the Royals. But, Stephen Kwan is now hitting, 326 in spring. Josh Naylor continues to hit the ball well. Could this offense maybe surprise us a little and look a little bit more like the offense from 2022?
Well, I think it could, Joe. I mean, guys are a year older, a year stronger, a little more mature. They've really been stressing the approach that just don't make contact to make contact. If you see a chance, if you like a pitch, take a rip at it. Try to hit it off the wall. Try to hit it out of the ballpark. Don't be afraid to strike out. And they've made that pitch to to almost every hitter in the lineup, except for Naylor and Jose Ramirez, because those are the kind of hitters they have in the lineup. They have those guys that are contact first mentality. So, it's kind of a change in personality, but perhaps it's working, because yesterday they had 14 hits. Ramirez had hit his fourth home run of the spring. So that was encouraging.
A B game was took place against Chicago. Tristan McKenzie pitched in that game, gave up six hits and two runs and one earned. Struck out seven, though, in 4 2/3 innings. So he looks like he's healthy and ready to go. We get him through maybe one more start here before he's ready to start the season. I guess David Fry was the catcher. He was back there. So, they've got Fry playing catcher again after bouncing him around the field for a week or so. Just McKenzie looks like he's ready to go.
Yeah, McKenzie. The only question with McKenzie is where are they going to pitch him? The first four guys are going to be Bieber, Bibee, and Logan Allen against Oakland. Starting Thursday when the season opens, then that fourth game, Carrasco, Beede, or McKenzie are in line for that.
Yeah, and they might have McKenzie throw another B game, sort of a light outing, and not have him go super hard before they would want him to pitch on that Sunday, the final game in that Oakland series, I would think, instead of pitching against Seattle on the road the next day. So we'll see there. Shane Bieber, probably his final Cactus League start. That takes place today at 4:05. He's going to take on the Rangers at Goodyear Ballpark. And the game will be on TV. You'll be able to watch it on Bally Sport Great Lakes. So We'll be able to tune in then. All right, Hoynesy, we're gonna just like yesterday when we broke down what we thought the opening day roster was gonna look like. We're sort of in a position right now to talk about the lineup and the batting order, and that really is it's focused on Stephen Vogt. I mean, the lineup card is his, so you know, he gets to make the decisions. He gets his input from Craig Albernez and Kai Correa and everybody else who's there. But we know Shane Bieber is going to be on the mound. What the defense behind him is going to look like, and what the batting order is going to look like, you know, remains to be seen on opening day. But then, you know, we also want to talk about what their regular rotation of sort of subs for if there's a lefty on the mound, or you know, if you know, guy needs a day off, or if they DH Jose Ramirez, or there are things like that. So you know, just we can go you know, spot by spot in the order, but let's first, you know, just throw out there what you think the starting or, you know, regular lineup will be defensively. Let's start with the outfield, where I think we can all agree that that Stephen Kwan is going to be your everyday starting left fielder.
Yeah, I think Kwan is the one constant in the outfield and left field. I think you know, it all depends how this roster shakes out, but I think Miles Straw's had a really good spring. I think he's probably earned a chance to keep that center field job. And it all depends if Estevan Florial makes the club. You know, he has not played well, but I would imagine he makes the club, so you can platoon there. And then you've got a platoon situation in right field with Brennan and Laureano.
Yeah, I think Laureano can also be flexible and, you know, play center field if Straw is struggling, or if they just like matchups better. Laureano has experience playing in center field as well. You know, that right field job is pretty much going to be his against, you know, any left-handed pitching. And you got to also think about whether or not they're going to let Davison De Los Santos, if he's on the roster, is he going to get any opportunities to play the outfield as well? Because they tried him out there. But where does Tyler Freeman fit into that situation, that the rotation in center, if you know, maybe if Laureano is in right and they like to give Tyler Freeman a game in center?
Yeah, for sure. You know, he saw a lot of time in center field this spring. Of course, he's been down with that flu bug for, you know, about a week now. We haven't seen him in the lineup, but they really like the way Tyler played center field, and he's, you know, so versatile. He can play short, he can play second, he can play third. And he's a right-handed hitter, Joe, so he can, you know, gives Vogt another right-handed bat coming off the bench as a pinch hitter, or maybe, you know, to play at third base if Ramirez needs a day off. He did that a lot last year, or just to, you know, break up those left-handed hitters, which, you know, this lineup has so many of.
Yeah, and we saw a couple of times last year, even Tito DH'd Stephen Kwan in a couple of games, and they had a right-handed left fielder out there as well. So there are options. There is versatility with a couple of these guys. David Fry could even, if he makes the roster, and who knows if he will or not, but if he's on the roster, you might expect him to maybe take a game or so in the outfield as well. They like that positional versatility. The infield is a different story. There's a lot more set positions there, and guys who are going to play every day, like Jose Ramirez around the diamond. I would expect Jose to be your everyday third baseman, and maybe at least once a week be getting a spot as a DH. You know, it was Tito did that a lot more last year. Do you expect Stephen Vogt to continue to try and give Jose games off his feet where he's only hitting and in the lineup that way?
Yeah, I would think so, Joe. He's 31. Last year he made 126 starts at third base. You know, the rest at DH. Freeman made 19 starts at third base. So you got kind of a shuttle system working right now, if that's the way Vogt wants to handle it.
Yeah, and Freeman works well as his like regular backup or regular substitute there at third base. I think that's a good situation to have to tell Freeman, hey, you're going to get regular at bats when Hosey's off his feet or Hosey's out of the lineup. You're going to be playing third base. Shortstop, I think yesterday when we talked about the roster situation, we talked about maybe both of us think that Brian Rocchio has a chance to win this job. So let's go with Rocchio there. It could be Arias. What do you think the chances are that, if either one of them struggles, that we might see Andrés Giménez there or somebody else? What do you think about the shortstop position and how that's going to play out regularly?
Yeah, I think it's going to be between Rocchio and Rocchio and Arias. I don't think they're going to move Giménez now. They would if they were going to, they would have done it much earlier in spring training. So I think we're going to see Rocchio. We'll see Arias. I think we'll see probably see a combination of both of them throughout the year. The thing I like about Rocchio, Joe, he's a switch hitter. And his splits weren't great in the big leagues last year, but he really didn't have a lot of time. He hit 300 against right-handers, 161 against lefties. But I think the splits at Columbus, are much more reflective of what this kid could do. He had 289 against righties and 259 against lefties. And if that's the case, then you can use him against lefties and righties. If that's how he, if that's you know if that's a truer read on his talent.
And give him 500 bats before we go deciding, oh well, the splits are what what they say they are or whatever. Got to give him a chance to settle to his numbers, before we go making a decision there. But either Rocchio or Arias is going to be the guy at that spot. And like we said, we both think that it's Rocchio now, but that could change, and who knows. Second base, that's decided, that's locked up. That's Andrés Giménez, the best defender in the American League overall, and the best second baseman, back-to-back Gold Glove winner. Not a problem there. Who backs him up though regularly if he needs a game off his feet or if he's dinged up, who do you see maybe jumping in there and playing a little second base?
I think Freeman's a guy. I mean, if he's healthy, if he starts the season on as one of the 26 players on the roster, he's going to be bouncing all over the infield and playing some center field and maybe some left field. Who knows? But yeah, I would think Freeman's the guy at second base. I think, or you could, I don't know, but if you want, I mean, if you really wanted to kind of experiment, you could put Rocchio over at second and play Freeman at short if you wanted to.
Yeah, that might happen as well. Who knows? I got to think though, if they're going to make Rocchio the guy, then he's going to play shortstop pretty much every game. And we saw flashes of him defensively last year where he was excellent. So that'll be interesting to watch. First base, you got to go with Josh Naylor as the starter there. Davison De Los Santos could back him up. If David Fry's on the roster, he could back him up. Tyler Freeman, I know, has a first base glove. I know he has one of those. So, what do you see shaking out there at first base, and who else could be in the mix to take innings there?
Yeah, I think Naylor put a lock on that job last season. Hits 311 against righties, 299 against lefties. Really kind of you can't you know you, he made himself platoon proof almost last season. And like you said, Joe, De Los Santos, if he makes the club, he's played some first base this spring. He's a corner outfielder by trade, so I think we'd see him there. And I really like Fry. I don't know if he's going to get squeezed out of this roster or not. It has a feel like that's going to happen, but he can play first base there too, and he's a right-handed hitter, so that works in his favor.
All right, Hoynsey, righty on the mound. Who do you let's construct a lineup 1 through 9. Who do you see out there? The first three I think are pretty clear, but I want to know what your thoughts are. 1 through 4, who do you see in the lineup against a right-hander right now?
Yeah, I've got Stephen Kwan, Andrés Giménez, Jose Ramirez, and Josh Naylor. Those are my top four against a right-hander.
Boy, all those left-handed bats, huh? That's obviously Hosey's a switch hitter, but you would never see something like that with Tito, would you?
No, and I think Vogt's and Tito had the same philosophy. Vogt's philosophy is construct the lineup to beat the starter. So if you're facing a right-hander, I think you want as many left-handed hitters in there as you can. And if you knock the starter out, then you start manipulating the lineup. You use your bench.
All right, so then we get beyond that that cleanup hitter, the 5 through 9. I gotta believe Roland Laureano is going to get a chance to hit a little bit higher up in the lineup. It just looks like, as they've used him throughout spring training, that middle portion backing up Josh Naylor. Do you think Roland Laureano can handle hitting behind that cleanup hitter and giving him a little protection?
Joe, I like Laureano, but you look at his splits, he only hit 200 against right-handers last year. So, that's a concern to me. But, the way this lineup is constructed, I think you've got to have a right-handed hitter behind Naylor. So I'm going with Laureano in the fifth spot.
We get to 6, 7, 8, 9. We forgot to mention catcher, I guess, when we were going position by position, but I think it's pretty much a foregone conclusion that Bo Naylor will be the starter, and Austin Hedges will back him up a couple of games, maybe a week. What kind of flexibility do they have with Bo Naylor if they want to keep his bat in the lineup as well?
Yeah, well, you could, Bo's a left-handed hitter. His splits in the big leagues, were not great. 243 against righties, 217 against lefties, but I don't think we got a fair picture of him, at the big league level at least. That was his first year, so I think we've got to give him a chance. So I think you could bat him anywhere from, 6 through 9, 6 through 8, something like that.
I think he could be in that sixth spot. We've seen Miles Straw in that number 7 spot throughout spring training here, these last couple of lineups that have come out. What do you like about that? Or do you think Straw is a guy who is going to wind up maybe at the bottom of the lineup where he sort of found a home last year at number 9?
Yeah, we're so ingrained with seeing Straw hit 9, for the last 2 years that I think it's refreshing to see a vote give him a chance to hit in different spots of the lineup. I'd like Straw maybe in the 7th or 8th spot. His splits are pretty even. 235 against left righties, 246 against lefties, and he's a right-handed hitter, Joe, so he can break up that flow of lefties.
Yeah, and really, if he proves that he's sort of back on track, maybe he works his way up towards the top of the lineup, and you can lengthen things out that way. Move Jimenez back down, and go Quan Straw at the top before Jose. But and then you also increase the base running and the speed at the top of the lineup. Although you don't really lose anything with Jimenez. I think it's all going to depend on this first couple of months here, how Miles Straw does, to see where he finds a home in the lineup. But the ability to maybe put him back up towards the top, could help as well. And you've got you're still talking about where you're going to put bat your DH on a regular basis. If Naylor is in the field at first base, is De Los Santos your DH? Who's your DH, and who fills out the 8 and 9 spots in this lineup? 7, 8, 9.
Yeah, against a right-hander, I think I'd probably DH Laureano and have Brennan play right, and my the bottom of the lineup would look like starting in the 7th spot, Bo Naylor. I mean, or yeah, starting in the 7th spot would be Straw, Bo Naylor, and Arocchio.
Yeah, Rocchio Arias would be,
Yeah, Rocchio Arias.
whoever's in that shortstop spot would probably be my 9 hitter as well. So that's against a righty. What do you think about a lefty on the mound? And like we said, that top half of the lineup looks, really lefty heavy. How do you break that up or move things around that way?
Yeah, Joe, I had a hard time putting a left-handed lineup against a lefty together, right? And they're going to face a lefty on game one in Oakland in Alex Woods. So it figures, right? How many left-handers did they face last year? I mean, every team they played who had a left-hander, they made it sure that they were facing the Guardians whenever they were in town.
Yeah, they intentionally moved guys or held guys back so that they could, start them. It happened more than once against Cleveland. So I think against a left-hander on the mound, I think Kwan and Naylor, like we said, are pretty much platoon-proof. Kwan in the number one spot, Naylor in that number four or three spot, depending on where you bat Jose. And that's sort of what you can play with a little bit. And I think Vogt had alluded to that. A couple of times in the preseason here, maybe you see Hosey in the number two spot and Naylor in the number three spot, against a left-handed pitcher on the mound.
Yeah, here's the lineup I went with against the lefty. Kwan, Jimenez, Ramirez, Naylor, then Laureano in right, Florial in center, De Los Santos at DH, and Rocchio or Arias at short, and Bo hitting ninth.
Yeah, and you can also it depends on who you have catching that day or how deep into the season you are. If you're giving
Yeah.
Bo a day off, you can also bat Hedges, who's a right-handed hitter, in there, and you don't really gain anything offensively that way, but you get Bo Naylor a day off his feet too, which is going to happen on a regular basis. I got to think they're going to try and keep him healthy as much as possible, but. But yeah, I think Laureano needs to play. His reputation came over as a guy who could hit lefties, so he's going to be the guy who has to sort of back up Josh Naylor and provide that protection there in the four spot maybe against a lefty. If they go to subs, you're talking Freeman as well. He's going to play against left-handed hitters or against left-handed pitchers. And you can maybe manipulate some things with Jose with center field and just find him at bats that way. I think it's it'll be interesting to see how Freeman adapts to that kind of role as they move forward.
Yeah, and I think Freeman's going to be okay. I would like to. It would really be nice if they had another right-handed hitter to come off the bench, and that's what works in Fry's favor. I just, Florial, and his splits were 312. This was at AAA last year with the Yankees. 312 against righties with 17 home runs. 220 against lefties with 11 home runs. So, at least the power, is kind of even, so that's encouraging. But, I would, you would really like to see them. I mean, Hedges, like you were saying, you're not going to pinch hit your backup catcher if you've only carrying two catchers. So he's kind of the emergency guy. Hits right-handed, and he has, if you're going to use him, he has to start basically, don't you think?
Yeah. If Hedges is in a game, he's starting and playing the whole game. That's that. You're not going to screw around, with that. And if Naylor is getting a day off, he's getting a day off and staying out. So that's where they are with that. All right. So that's the lineup. That's a breakdown of where we think and what we think a constructed lineup will look like heading into the regular season, depending on who we think is on the roster, and obviously that'll change over time, but we'll have a few conversations about that this year, I'm sure, on this podcast and what the lineup looks like. I want to remind our listeners, if you want to follow along with our Guardians coverage and get text updates sent directly to your phone, the best way to do that is Guardians Subtext. It's $3.99 a month to subscribe. Go to cleveland.com/subtext or send a text message to 216-208-4346 to get signed up for Guardians Subtext. Hoynsie, the big story in Major League Baseball today over the last 48 hours here concerns the $700 million man, and Shohei Ohtani is maybe in a little bit of hot water. This is a really interesting story that broke over the last couple of days. Jeff Passan, among the reporters, getting into a $4.5 million payment from one of Shohei Ohtani's bank accounts that went to cover illegal gambling debts. And it was associated with an illegal gambling operation. And the story out of Ohtani's camp was that his close friend and interpreter, Ippe Mizuhara, had stolen the money or misappropriated the funds or used it to cover his own gambling debts. It's all sounds kind of fishy and sounds like a big cover story. But what we do know is that an account associated with baseball's most popular and widely known player throughout the world is associated with illegal gambling. And, you know, this is not a really good look for Ohtani, not a good look for the Dodgers, and could be a huge scandal for Major League Baseball. What was your takeaway when you first heard that Ohtani, who, you know, a guy who managed to, you know, keep secret the name of his dog and the name of and the fact that he even had a wife, you know, he was so skilled at that kind of, you know, public image management. And yet all of a sudden he didn't know where $4.5 million of his own money was going. Kind of find it hard to believe. What do you take away from this story?
Yes, it's like he lost a $5 bill in the cushion of his couch, Joe. I'm not sure. I'm $4.5 million. Does that equate to $5 to you and me? I'm shot to with Ohtani, but yeah, the thing that got me, Joe, is Mizuhara changed his story. You know, he told ESPN at first that it was a loan from Ohtani to pay Mizuhara's gambling debts off. Then, you know, like an hour later, he met with the reporter again and said, "Hey, it's all my fault. That he had stole the money." And all of a sudden, you know, Ohtani's people are saying their client is the victim of a massive theft. So, you know, it's like you said, it's fishy and it smells like a kettle of fish.
Well, and Ohtani's image, I mean, this is a guy who, since he came to Major League Baseball in 2018, has had a squeaky clean image. He's, you know, done everything right, said things the right way, done things the right way, sort of like LeBron James from the very beginning in the NBA. I mean, you really didn't get the sense that, you know, he had done things, there was anything wrong, you know, with him. And it turns out that he might be connected up to, what if Major League Baseball investigates and finds out that Ohtani was betting, and even worse, that he was betting on baseball?
Well, if he's betting on baseball, you know, he's in serious, serious trouble. Move over Pete Rose, because, you know, even though MLB has jumped in bed and, you know, up to it, you know, neck deep and pulled the covers up, you know, to its neck with the gambling, with the professional gambling and legalized gambling, you know, you still can't bet on baseball. And, you know, that's the big rule. Mizuhara said he didn't even bet on baseball. He knew that much. So, you know, I don't know, Joe. I mean, if that is the case and Ohtani, you know, is involved into this, you know, I mean, more than he already is. I mean, you know, MLB has to investigate and they have to really take a firm stand, and they have to come down on this guy if a penalty is justified.
Yeah, and we're not saying by any means that we know anything that's the case. You know, his story might be, you know, accurate or true or whatever. There hasn't been an investigation yet. MLB hasn't you know, announced anything. So, you know, as we move forward, we'll find out. But, you know, this is going to be hanging over Ohtani and the Dodgers this season, when they were expected to, you know, just sweep their way to a World Series. And if for that to sort of be looming over them all season is got to be a distraction, got to be, you know, more of a distraction than having a guy who's making $700 million on your team. I think that's the case. This could go down as, you know, one of baseball's great scandals. Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa, Alex Rodriguez, You know, all these guys have great scandals associated with them, huge scandals, either, you know, PEDs or, you know, just anything. I just, this could be devastating to the Dodgers. What if he's banned for life like Pete Rose? What if an investigation finds out that Ohtani bet on baseball with an illegal sports gambling outfit and he gets suspended for life? What do the Dodgers do?
Well, I mean, they could void the contract, I'm sure. You know, I'm sure there's a morals clause in the contract that, you know, you have to, you know, perform.
Not bet on baseball?
Yeah, not bet on baseball. You have to, you know, have to handle yourself like a, you know, you have to do, you know, walk the, you know, have to walk the straight and narrow. So I'm sure there's, you know, that's probably a standard clause in every contract. But yeah, this is a shock, Joe, and it happens when MLB is opening the season in Seoul, Korea, you know, with a lot of pomp and circumstance, and they're trying to spread the game, you know, and enhance the image of the game. It was not a good look for anyone involved.
Yeah, and what happened after the second game of the Seoul series, there were Dodgers team officials blocking the way to Ohtani's locker after the game. He did not speak to media after the second game of that series, which
his interpreter was fired. So who's going to speak for him?
Exactly. But you know, he would know enough to get through an interview. It is largely Japanese reporters following him as well. So
yeah,
he didn't speak to anybody, which was interesting.
He's smart enough to not do that, Joe. That's a point in his favor. So the only thing he can get himself, if he talks now, he just gets himself into more trouble for sure. This isn't going away. Like you said, this is going to linger over that ball club all year.
Yeah. And it really does open up the door to a conversation about, you know, the larger idea of sports gambling and its rapid increase. Since that 2018 U.S. Supreme Court decision that sort of expanded and allowed for states to introduce this legalized gambling, the rapid growth of this market has led to some problems. And we saw just last week the Cavs coach, J.B. Bickerstaff, you know, pretty much unprompted, he came out and said, hey, you know, my family's been threatened by gamblers about things. You know, and these are you're going to see things like that. The Indiana Pacers have Tyrese Halliburton. He came out and said, you know, he feels like he's being used as a prop because on social media, all these guys do is message him about, you know, his statistics and, you know, the prop bets and the gambling chatter that surrounds it. And the last week, the NBA fined Rudy Gobert, the center from the Timberwolves, because he did the Johnny Manziel money gesture after he disagreed with a referee. He did that to a referee, sort of insinuating, you know, hey, you're taking money here. They fined him $100,000. They were serious about that. They don't want the perception that the players even think that, you know, something fishy is going on here. So this is not over by any means. This is going to be a year-long conversation about how gambling influences what we're seeing on the fields.
Yeah, and you know, the basis of it is money. You know, the teams are making money off this. The gambling sites are making money off this. The players, I don't know if they're getting a cut of this, or you know, they're getting a cut of the revenue. I mean, I would think that's part of a lot of, you know, basic agreement, you know, negotiations. There's so much money involved, and you know, it's just you open Pandora's box when all the leagues jumped in bed with legalized gambling.
Yeah, that's certainly the case. All right, Honesy, that's going to wrap up today's edition of the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast. You're heading out to Arizona to get the season started, and we will talk to you on Monday from Goodyear. And we'll catch up then.
Good deal, Joe.